and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. A judge rules on the protest route for demonstrators at the Democratic National Convention. Our Spotlight Politics team on that and more. Plus, Cook County court officials are clearing judges' schedules ahead of possible mass arrests at the DNC.
A quarter used to buy an hour of parking time. Today,
And Chicago's notorious parking meter deal could be costing the city even more money. We explain how the deal came about in the first place. And now to some of today's top stories. Tens of thousands of protesters gathering to demonstrate outside of the Democratic National Convention next week will have to stick to the city's proposed route instead of the one organizers had proposed. The route takes marchers from Union Park along Washington Boulevard before jogging north away from the United Center and then again continuing west. Now, you can see the route then loops back to Lake Street before heading east, returning to Union Park. In her ruling, federal judge Andrea Wood decided the 1.4-mile route is sufficient for protesters to gather without First Amendment violations. The coalition to march on the DNC had preferred a longer route that would have kept them along the security barriers on Washington Boulevard. Meanwhile, city and federal officials say they are ready for next week's convention and the protests and traffic headaches that might come along with it for Chicago residents. Secret Service says while it has learned lessons from the assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump last month, this event is much different from a campaign rally.
If you're not learning and trying to be innovative and creative in law enforcement, you're not doing your job. So obviously all of us in law enforcement are trying to get better every day. But as far as comparing Butler to a national special security event, you can't compare it. This is a whole of government approach. We've been planning for this convention for well over a year, so we can't compare the two.
The city's Office of Emergency Management and Communications advises residents to download the OEMC app or send a text to get updates on traffic, street closures, and other emergencies. And if you're traveling through O'Hare Airport anytime soon, you'll have some new food and retail options. Chicago Department of Aviation officials are announcing the addition of five new concessions at Terminal 5. The stores include Publican Quality Bread, Six Points Market, Metropolis Coffee Company, In Motion, and Boulevard and Branch. And one more note, WTTW News is launching a brand new email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan. We'll bring you the news you need every day, along with the backstory. We'll also help you explore your community by connecting you with information and helping you navigate Chicago's many neighborhoods. You can go to WTTW.com/newsletter to subscribe. Up next, how Cook County courts are preparing for possible mass arrests during the DNC. Chief Judge Tim Evans on how it'll work right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
With the Democratic National Convention just days away, Cook County judges are clearing their schedules. It comes as part of an administrative order from Chief Judge Tim Evans to prepare for the possibility of mass arrests. Chicago Police Superintendent Larry Snelling spoke this week about the department's approach to large crowds.
We have plans in place. We have the manpower to put at these locations to make sure that we're proactive to stop any of these things from happening. Again, when you get a group of people who want to become violent actors, once one commits an act of violence and it's gone unchecked, then others feel comfortable stepping in and doing the same thing. Those are the things that we're not going to tolerate.
So joining us now with more is Chief Judge Tim Evans. Thank you for joining us, Chief. Good to see you.
Good to be here.
So explain for us, if you would, what is the plan for next week and for the rest of August while we're at it?
Well, what we've done is we've entered a couple of orders that I think will make things smooth. Things will go along very, very well. People who want to be able to petition their government will be able to do so safely And we hope the police will be safe. We hope that all will be well. But in case massive arrests occur, what we have done is we've entered an order that establishes a facility at Belmont and Western that will be set aside specifically to deal with those kinds of cases. It will not interfere with our regular routine. Our regular courts will continue unabated, but they will be able to get people in, get them processed, and get them out quickly in a reasonable way. There's plenty of transportation there, both the CTA and the trains. And we think that we prepared for this possibility if it does occur.
So then that processing that you say, CPD, for example, when making an arrest, what they would normally do at a district office, they would instead do that at the Belmont facility and also be able to see a judge there if necessary.
That is right. As long as it is under their characterization of a coordinated massive arrest. And that's a term of art that the police departments use. They will notify my office when they reach that particular point in time. And at that point, things will then be shifted from 26 in California, for example, to Belmont and Western that I'm describing to you. And all of the stakeholders have been informed. We've had 55 people meeting on this on a regular basis so that everybody will be well aware of what's expected of them and their team, and we expected everybody to work very, very well together.
So should CPD alert your office that massive arrests are occurring or will need to occur, what kind of proceedings might your judges need to be available for at that facility?
Well, for example, there are two ways that people can be released at Belmont and Western. One will be by certificates, for example, with a date to return if it's not a very serious allegation. If it is a very serious allegation, the first appearance hearing has to take place there in person. And there, our judges will have to be there. They'll have to make a decision as to whether the person can be released into the community or be detained. And they will be detained if there is a clear and present threat or if there's a flight risk. If they have to be detained, they would then be shipped from Belmont and Western to 26 in California, where they will stay until their time is come and gone.
Of course, being processed into the Cook County Jail there, if that
That's
is the
right.
case. And you say that your office has trained 57 judges, as well as those who are already assigned to criminal and pretrial divisions on the Pretrial Fairness Act. And it sounds like that is what you're referring to with regards to whether or not people will be, when judges make the decision whether or not someone needs to be detained.
And that's right. We did that because we've had to prolong the day, quote unquote, for a given judge's series. For example, the court there at Belmont and Western will be open from 8 to 4 and then from 4 to 12. And that's two shifts in effect. And so what we don't want to do is burn judges out. We've got backup judges who are ready, willing, and able to provide justice for people who need those justices.
And you say this won't impact previously scheduled criminal and civil cases that are already happening, for example, at the Layton Criminal Courthouse or Daly Center?
Yes. What I'm saying is that we've shifted most of those cases so that we'll only be dealing with those matters that are absolutely necessary. For example, there will be speedy trial issues where a case has to be dismissed unless that case can be resolved amicably in accordance with the law. Those cases will go ahead, but instead of those cases going ahead at 26 in California, we'll shift those cases to Rolling Meadows, the third district, so that justice will be done. It's just that we'll be shifting cases around a bit.
So this means probably jurors or potential jurors, attorneys, defendants, all the plaintiffs, all of those folks will have to make the trip to Rolling Meadows for regularly scheduled.
And before they do that, juries are being informed that they are on standby. So if they receive a summons from my office, all they need to do is call in. We can tell them whether they're going to be needed or not. We've tried our best to obviate the necessity that most jurors would have to serve on this occasion.
What conversations have conversations been like with Chicago Police Department between them and your office in preparation for this, and how are communications going to go going forward?
Well, they approached my office, the City of Chicago, the Corporation Counsel's office, the Police Department, and they explained that they considered several scenarios, and working with the Secret Service, working with all of the other officials who are part of trying to keep everybody safe, and they thought that this would be the best possible scenario. They knew that we'd have to open up a whole new court that we'd have to get it ready in a very short period of time. But I told him I was willing to do that because the citizens of our country deserve the right to be able to raise their issues to the members of their government. But by the same token, we want everybody to be safe. We want as much fairness as we can surround them with as it becomes necessary. And we're going to deliver that.
Have you or even Cook County courts ever dealt with something like what is expected or what could be possible next week? Has that happened before? And I'm mostly thinking back to 1968, but are there other occasions?
There have been. We have seen protests that have erupted in such a way that people did not fully anticipate the broad base of that occurring, but we're ready for it. Nobody wants to see 1968 again. Nobody wants to see that. We know that this city can handle it. Our community is ready for it. People are going to be heard, and it's going to be a very successful convention. I have no doubt about that.
I'm also thinking about summer of 2020. I imagine that was probably a busy time for your office then as well.
It was indeed, and rightly so, because of what happened to George Floyd and all of those kinds of things. So we've learned an awful lot as a legal community. The state's attorney has been involved, the public defender, the state's, people who do the work for the clerk's office, the sheriff's office. We've all been working together as a team. This is a team effort.
All right. Chief Judge Tim Evans, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck to you and your team next week.
Thank you for giving me an opportunity to explain to the public. All will be well.
You bet. Good to see you.
All right.
Up next, the history of Chicago's infamous parking meter deal.
Make WTTW your home for 2024 convention coverage. Leading up to the week of the Democratic National Convention, find the latest news on our website at WTTW.com/news. And spend each convention night with us, beginning at 5:30 p.m., with live Chicago Tonight reporting and analysis from the convention before and after PBS NewsHour's primetime coverage. WTTW, your source for trusted, independent news and information.
Chicago's notorious parking meter deal could be costing the city even more money. The Chicago Sun-Times reports the city could be on the hook for $100 million in damages after arbitrators determined the city shortchanged the company. But if your memory is a little fuzzy on how the controversial deal came about in the first place, here's Patty Wetley with the backstory in tonight's edition of WTTW News Explains.
Every time a Chicagoan pays for parking, an investor says, ka-ching. The meters are a serious moneymaker, just not for Chicago. Maybe you've heard of the infamous parking meter deal. Here's why it's so unpopular and how it became a case study in worst practices. Picture the year 2008. A global financial crisis strikes and everyone is a little strapped for cash, including Chicago. The city is broke. Now, if you want to plug a budget gap, raising property taxes will do the trick. But if you want to remain popular with voters, that's not such a great idea. So Mayor Richard M. Daley got creative. He looked around for assets to sell. What about Chicago's 36,000 parking meters? Bingo! A hastily formed investment group, the creatively named Chicago Parking Meters LLC, agreed to cough up $1 billion in change for a 75-year lease. And Chicago's city council rubber-stamped that plan faster than members could read the terms of the deal. $1 billion sounds like so much money, and it is, but so much more money may have gotten left on the table. Some analysts believe the parking meters were worth at least $2 billion. As soon as the new renters took over the property, they began raising fees and their profits. A quarter used to buy an hour of parking time. Today? Ha! But wait, there's more. If the city takes a parking space out of service for, say, a street festival or to build a protected bike lane, it has to pay Chicago parking meters for the lost revenue. So now the landlord is paying the renter. Plenty of people have searched for loopholes that would allow the city to break this almost comically lopsided lease. No dice. The courts have called the deal foolish, short-sighted, or worse, but it turns out it's not illegal to strike a bad deal. With some 60 years left on its lease, Chicago Parking Meters LLC has already made back its initial investment and then some. An impressive return on investment for them and a tough break for Chicagoans.
Got out our website for more in our WTTW News Explain series, from why Chicago's pension debt is so high to how the city's grid street system works. You can find them all at WTTW.com/explains. Up next, our Spotlight Politics team with the latest on next week's Democratic National Convention. A judge sides with the city, greenlighting its protest route for the Democratic National Convention, as we discussed earlier. That same judge says Stateville inmates need to be moved out by the end of September. And we've got updated numbers on what police misconduct costs taxpayers. Here with all that and more is our Spotlight Politics team, Amanda Vinicky and Heather Sharone. Hey, team. So, Heather, late yesterday, you wrote about this. Obviously, Judge Andrea Wood, federal judge, ruled that expected protesters are being given ample opportunity to exercise their First Amendment rights on the city's existing route near the United Center. What exactly was this dispute all about?
Well, this is a coalition of nearly 200 groups who wants to protest all sorts of issues near the Democratic National Convention. And they wanted an almost 2.5 mile long protest route that would take them directly up Washington Boulevard, which will go right by the United Center so that they can see delegates and delegates can see them. And, oh, yeah, the TV cameras that will be there will also see them as well. But the city and the Secret Service said no, that would create a massive problem because part of Washington Boulevard, as you can see on the screen there, is going to be part of what we're calling the hard perimeter, that orange. And that is going to be concrete, not flexible barriers. And they said, look, if we allow you to march up Washington, it's a possibility that there would be thousands of people, if something gets out of hand, could be crushed against that non-flexible barrier, which is why you want to see them make that turn and head away from Washington Boulevard. Now, the coalition said this afternoon they're going to appeal that ruling, but time is running out. There is not a lot of time for these changes to be made. And the federal judge said, look, the First Amendment does not mean that you get to say exactly what you want to say, where you want to say it. We need to make reasonable accommodations for safety and security. And she says the city has.
You know, I will add, because like you said, part of this is about getting attention of the media worldwide. And maybe they don't have that. But this back and forth in court and the whole question of what the map is going to be, they've brought a lot of attention already to their issues, at least here in Chicago. So anybody who matters in the city and state certainly is very well aware.
That alone has drawn the attention that they are seeking. And, you know, we know that they're bringing tens of thousands of protesters alone. That's just the protesters. We haven't said a thing about the delegates and all of the other people that are going to be descending upon the city for this next week for various roles that we haven't even thought of. CPD is going to be under some scrutiny next week as well, Heather.
They will face a huge test, the biggest one since the summer of 2020, when the racial justice protests really swept the city and resulted in unrest and a significant amount of damage. The handling of that has been roundly criticized by not just the inspector general, but also the federal court monitor in charge of CPD's efforts to reform itself. So they are under all new policies, which will face their first stress tests starting on Sunday. And they will have to operate under new protocols for when they can make mass arrests and when they can arrest people engaging in First Amendment protected activity. And it's complicated, right? Because you have a right to sort of protest and have your say. You do not have the right to create a public safety threat. The issue is when does that line get crossed? Much like a lot of things, it can be in the eye of the beholder.
Okay, so obviously there's a good bit at stake for Governor Pritzker as well, Amanda.
I mean, he bargained very hard to have the Democratic National Convention here, and although he was not chosen to be Vice President Kamala Harris's running mate on her bid for the White House, it is still very obvious that he wants a political future ahead of them, be that a run for another term as governor, be that moving to Washington is his focus at some point in time. So certainly, yes, this is huge for him. He has also really tried hard to be what he has sort of modeled as a pragmatic progressive and to stand up for rights of protesters and really say that police and law enforcement need to change their ways. And at the same time, he avoided some of that scrutiny, for example, that faced Mayor Lightfoot, because he's not the mayor of the city of Chicago. This, however, is an event that he is really the face of.
So the same judge who sided with the city on that protest route is the same federal judge who also had another important ruling for the state about Stateville Correctional Center. Amanda, what are those deets there?
So this is in Will County, and we have known for some time that it is decrepit. It's falling down. That's why Governor Pritzker said that he reserved money in this year's state budget and also put forth a plan to really tear it down, demolish it, build a new one in the same site. That's something that the union has been fighting. They're fearful that those jobs are going to go away. And yet this judge has really now solidified that this is going to happen, saying that the prisoners and all but the health unit there need to be moved out by the end of next month. That does fit with a timeline that the Pritzker administration had previously laid out. And Brandis, I know you've done reporting on some of the terrible conditions there.
Yeah, we have. And our colleague Blair Patton and I have been reporting on some of these issues. Obviously, you know, we covered the case over the summer of one of the Northwestern Prison Education Program graduates dying while incarcerated there. And there have been reports that it was related to the heat. We know he suffered from asthma, but we were just looking at photos a few minutes ago of, you know, as you said, concrete literally crumbling around them, leaks, the stifling heat, and there being no ventilation, fans not working or being padlocked, windows being nailed shut. So a complicated situation there. Obviously, there are a lot of questions about these transfers, when they might happen, and certainly for families of the men who are incarcerated there, where they're going to go. But something we're all going to have to come back to, because I want to get to another law enforcement story that Heather has been working on with our colleague Jared Rutecki, because we have a great team here.
Heck yeah.
doing a detailed analysis on what police misconduct is costing taxpayers.
Well, we specifically looked at the payouts that have come out of the pocketbook of Chicago taxpayers when the same officer has been accused of misconduct repeated times. We found over the last 5 years that 200 officers have led to multiple payouts, be that a settlement or a jury verdict, costing taxpayers nearly $165 million. Now, that is a lot of money, but it is nearly 43% of the total nearly $368 million cost of police misconduct settlements over that five-year period. Now, something that the police department has been trying to address is its documented inability to hold officers accountable for misconduct. Now, the city does not track these lawsuits, so they cannot discipline these officers for this conduct that has been adjudicated to be improper, and that is a significant problem as the reform efforts enter nearly 5.5 years long. And Jared and I are going to keep pounding on this because this is a massive cost to taxpayers. If you remember the Bring Chicago Home referendum we talked so much, that would have raised $100 million a year. So that gives you a sense of just how a significant part of the city's budget this really is.
Back to state politics, Amanda. True that Governor Pritzker signed, 260 new bills? His hand's got it, right? Can he just stamp it? Does it still count?
There is a stamp. Although it is okay, pretty good. Funny to watch when he signs bills during
with
the
like
ceremonies.
One pen and then
yeah,
hands the pen away.
Yeah, you got to do the whole pen switch out so you can get a commemorative pen.
So everybody gets a commemorative pen. Exactly. 260 bills. Anything stands out?
I mean, there are a lot of bills among them, and so we'll be reporting them out as time comes because many of them don't take effect right away, but I'll name a couple of them. There's one that requires training for folks like nail technicians. I know you've got very good nails, Brandon.
Thank you.
So when you go to that nail tech, or maybe if you get a massage,
I know that they've been well trained.
They have to be trained and actually spotting skin cancer. And so it's things that people that would be in a place to know, to be in a position to notice that sort of things, could hopefully do something about it. There's also going to be our earlier education on fentanyl and the dangers of that. That will be starting in sixth grade. And unfortunately, that's necessary because we know that it is a continued major health hazard. There's going to be also requirements that if you have state buildings or parks, that if they get new lighting and rehab, that it has to be up to a certain code so that it's not so bright that it's damaging for, you know, pollution for birds, for wildlife, what have you. And then I'll add another one that is going to be, I think, relevant to our renters. There's something that prevents them if they say, hey, wait, you need to fix my heater. I've got a problem with our housing here, unsafe, that their landlord cannot retaliate against them by saying, you're out of here.
The one thing that we didn't have time to get to is the state's official mushroom, which feels important. The Calvatia gigantea. We'll be sure to get that.
The giant puffball.
The giant puffball. We'll definitely get to
piranha.
That one next week.
A big, big
sounds delicious. Can you eat the state mushroom?
You
all
can.
Right. We're going to put our top people on this. Good to know. Thank you. That's Spotlight. Heather Sharone, Amanda Vinicky. And of course, make Chicago Tonight your home for the DNC next week. Join me and these people live at 5:30 and 10 each convention night. We'll have live coverage, analysis, and conversations with some of Illinois' leading Democrats before and after PBS NewsHour. One more note before we go. We've just launched our brand new email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan. Shout out to Josh Terry, another one of our awesome team members. It is a newsletter created with input from you. We'll be bringing you the news you need every day, along with the backstory, helping you understand how we got to where we are and where we're going. We'll also help you explore your own community, as well as neighborhoods across the city that you may not be familiar with. You can go to WTTW.com/newsletter to subscribe. And that is our show for this Tuesday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. We hear from some local businesses hoping to raise their profile at the Democratic National Convention and learn about a strategic voting initiative for the Black community. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to recognize its founder and senior partner, Robert Clifford, who ranked number one in the state of Illinois by Super Lawyers Top 10 2024 Illinois Super Lawyers List.